Welcome to Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. Later on the program, we'll look at a controversial measure to protect the environment that was killed in the courts. Protecting the rights of nature coming up in about 20 minutes. But first, the U.S., Canada, and the states of Michigan and Ohio, and the province of Ontario are looking at ways to control the cyanobacteria blooms that appear in the western basin of Lake Erie each summer. Cyanobacteria is toxic to humans and animals. Toledo's water system was shut down because of the cyanobacteria levels 5 years ago. Those toxic blooms are fed by nutrients from farmland runoff as well as other sources. Ohio and southeastern Michigan have been studied, as well as the Detroit River, but there's another significant source of nutrients that a recent study examined, Lake Huron. Joining me to explain that is the lead author of the study, Don Scavia. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Welcome.
So this strategy to reduce nutrients for the Detroit River doesn't look at Lake Huron currently. How much of a factor is the lake?
Well, it's actually a pretty big factor now, much bigger than we thought originally. Most of the estimates of loads from Lake Huron in the past were based on the assumption that the concentration of phosphorus entering the top of the St. Clair River was the same as the open lake, Lake Huron. But in fact, it turns out that it's much higher than that. In fact, about three times higher than what we've assumed in the past.
Well, that is significant. What would have to be done to reduce phosphorus to meet the reduction targets that the U.S. and Canada are trying to reach now that this new information is available to them?
If you assume that you can't control the Lake Huron load, I'll come back to that in a second, mm-hmm. And if you choose to do no more on the Detroit treatment plant, because they've already reduced their loads by 50%, then that means that in order to hit a 40% reduction target, which is the targets out there now, in order to get a 40% reduction from the Detroit River, you have to reduce the other loads, the agricultural loads, by over 70%.
So you're talking about those other watersheds, the rivers in Canada, the rivers in Michigan that are feeding into it.
That's right. And
yeah, I should say feeding into the Detroit River is what I mean to say, or the St. Clair River.
That's right, in Lake St. Clair as well.
If we're talking about a 40% reduction and we have to increase it substantially because of the Lake Huron contribution, is there a better way to do that?
You can try to address the Lake Huron load. What we've discovered in this analysis is that extra load that actually had bypassed the monitoring programs, and so we didn't really know about it until now, seems to be coming from resuspension of the nearshore Lake Huron sediments, primarily on the Ontario side, but also a bit on the Michigan side. And so in order to reduce those loads, you have to try to protect the shoreline from erosion, but also reduce the loads, the phosphorus loads and the algae production along those coastlines so that you get less phosphorus in that sediment.
Is that sediment that's in the shoreline now, is that from agriculture primarily?
Yes, it would probably be from the loads from the Ontario watersheds, from those agricultural watersheds up there.
Why is this phosphorus being resuspended then if it's in the shoreline?
So interesting. It's resuspended by winds and waves. And when the waves get big enough, they sort of bring the sediment back up to the surface, and then the currents bring it to the top of the St. Clair River. What we found was that because of global warming, climate change, there's less ice over time and there's bigger storms over time. And so that new load that we've discovered has actually been increasing over the last several decades because of less ice and more waves.
I don't want to get too deep into the methods, but how did you figure this out when it hadn't been observed before?
Well, we had analysis where we're looking at the total loads along the Detroit River, we pulled together all the U.S. and Canadian data that from the monitoring programs, and we noticed that the concentration of phosphorus, the load of phosphorus coming out of Lake Huron, was actually quite a bit lower than the measured load going into Lake St. Clair. And this was actually pointed out in some papers by the Canadians a year or so ago. So the assumption was maybe there's a lot of load coming in the St. Clair River that's making up that difference. But we looked at that, and it really was not making the difference. And so the difference between what's going into the top of St. Clair River and what's coming out of the bottom of St. Clair River had to be coming from Lake Huron. And we then worked with the Canadians and noticed that their monitoring program was twice a month in the past, and over the last several years, it's gone down to once a month. And so these big resuspension events in Lake Huron that were then pushing this pulse of phosphorus into the St. Clair River were being missed by the monitoring program because they're only taking samples once a month.
You noted that the current strategy does not consider more reductions at the Detroit Wastewater Treatment Plant, which is the largest source of phosphorus entering the Detroit River. It has reduced phosphorus, as you noted, by about 51% in the last decade. What would have to be done, and how much would it cost to reduce phosphorus levels from the wastewater plant further?
I don't know how much it would cost. I do know that it would cost quite a bit, because as you get further and further down the reduction curve, the costs go up quite a bit. There are new technologies coming online in general, available over time, and those might be able to be applied if they could reduce the amount of water going into the treatment plant through various means. That would help. And I know they're working on it, and they're continuing to work on it, but the it will become pretty expensive unless there's new technologies available.
Yeah, do you mean like reducing the amount of stormwater runoff that goes into the sewer system or something like that?
Yeah, you know, we actually looked at that in the combined sewers. While there are the combined sewer overflows are really important and big problems locally where they occur for lots of reasons, they don't make up a whole lot of the contribution coming from the point sources in the Detroit area compared to the regular sewage treatment.
How has your report been received by the U.S. and Canadian entities involved in the phosphorus reduction effort?
Well, they've been very concerned. We've met with them a couple of times. This was new information. The Great Lakes Water Quality Agreement has a structure in place, an administrative structure in place for adaptive management. Where the plan was to set these goals and set these targets and then, you know, revisit them over time as they learn more. We've met with them. There's actually a workshop being planned in December to bring together U.S., Canadian, Michigan, Ontario folks to look at the whole problem and try to understand what you would need to do if you're going to try to address either the Lake Huron load or change the targets for the rest of the system. So they've been very receptive and are trying to figure out what to do next.
Yeah, changing the targets, I mean, relaxing the expectation of a 40% reduction target from the Detroit River watershed is something that you suggest is an alternative, probably not one that people are going to be in favor of. Is that realistic, considering the concerns about the not only the cyanobacteria levels, but you know the dead zones that I want to talk about?
Yeah, well, so first, I think this is important to point out that the cyanobacteria blooms are really not driven by the Detroit River load. It's really the Maumee River load that drives that. The Detroit River load is a large load, but it comes in with a very low concentration of phosphorus. It's a big load because the flow is so high. The Detroit River is very important along with the Maumee for the dead zone, and so that's an important target. You know, the alternatives, the adjustments that can be made, you know, one would be to relax the target of the 40% coming out of the Detroit River. And assign a higher target to other places, which is politically difficult to do, but that's an alternative. You could reduce the target for the Detroit River. Basically, what you're doing is accepting a more dead zone, which is not something that people want to do, and that may not be accepted.
Let's talk about that dead zone for a second, sure. Because we hear a lot about cyanobacteria blooms in Lake Erie, not so much about hypoxic zones or dead zones. How big is it?
So the dead zone in the central basin of Lake Erie, because that's where it occurs, is actually in the last few years, it's been as big as it was back in the 60s and the 70s, covering up, you know, more than two-thirds of the central basin.
That's disturbing. So right. Any phosphorus level coming in is contributing to that problem in particular, not just the cyanobacteria, but as you say, which is significant because of what's coming out of the Maumee River. Has the alert gone up about this hypoxic zone, this dead zone, in the same way that we hear about the cyanobacteria?
In the Great Lakes Water Quality Agreement discussions, it has, you know, equal concern with the cyanobacteria. In the public, not so much. I mean, if you start potentially impacting drinking water, that raises it to a whole new level, which is why the cyanobacteria gets a lot more media and public attention. But in the governance structure, the dead zone has pretty much equal concern.
Don Scavia is professor emeritus at the University of Michigan. He's the lead author of the study, Watershed Assessment of Detroit River Phosphorus Loads to Lake Erie. It was published in the Journal of Great Lakes Research. Thanks very much for taking the time.
I appreciate it.